Hello and welcome to the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast. I'm Beth Shank, long-term host of the podcast, enjoying our co-hosts, Dr. Heidi Honegger-Rogers and Dr. Heidi Segan, who are interviewing fellows in the Environmental Health Research Institute for Nurse and Clinician Scientists. Today, they interview fellow Anto Paul, population health nurse at Catholic Health Services of Long Island. Enjoy.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast. I'm Heidi Honegger-Rogers, and I am here with my friend and co-host, Heidi Segan. We are so excited today to be interviewing Anto Paul. Anto is part of the Environmental Health Research Institute Nurse Clinician Scientist Cohort Number 2, and he's going to talk to us about the work that he is doing in public health and environmental health. So let me just give you a little bio about Mr. Paul. So Anto Paul is a population health nurse at Catholic Health Services of Long Island. He has a master's in public health and community health nursing from Hunter College in New York. He holds certifications as diabetes care and education specialist, and is board certified as an advanced public health nurse. From 2008 to 2010, he worked for 2 years as a diabetes educator in a South Asian community-based research program. This experience significantly broadened his perspective on chronic diseases and enabled him to comprehend the multifaceted influences of social and environmental factors on health within South Asian and other immigrant communities, which he's going to talk to us more about today. Presently, he's playing an active role as a board member of the South Asian Public Health Association, which is a non-governmental organization committed to advancing the health and well-being of South Asian communities in the United States, and the Indian Nurses Association of New York. He's been, like I said, he's been in the Environmental Health Research Institute for Nurse Clinician Scientists cohort for the 2023 class. And his project is absolutely fantastic, and we're really excited to talk to him about it. Anto, before we get started, would you mind sharing a little bit of your seed story about how you became a nurse and a nurse that cares about environmental health and the communities that you're working in?
Hi, thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about the story about my activism on environmental health. I became a nurse in India, and I immigrated in the year 2004. And I've been working most of my nursing career in the United States in outpatient and chronic disease management. So as Heidi mentioned, I happen to be a nurse for a South Asian diabetes education program in New York City. That was one of the opportunity that gave me to see the bigger picture and identify the influence of social determinants of health, how it influenced the chronic disease and the management. And during COVID, I was looking how the environment is influencing the health, because that was the time I noticed the pollution and all the things have a dramatic change. Then I came across these organizations and identified environment also a huge impact or important component in the social determinants of health. And I'm all these my years as a public health nurse, I understood this is a area, it's explored, but it is not explored to the fullest of its potential that will improve not only the environment, it will improve the health outcome of the individual, because we will be more proactive and be vigilant to an environmental challenge. And we will, as a team or as a community, as a society, we can work towards to a better outcome, not only for your current generation, for the future generation.
Thank you so much for sharing your journey as a fellow public health nurse. I appreciate how you acknowledge and really respect that relationship between the environment and populations and health outcomes, right? That's why we're nurses, right? We want to improve population health outcomes. So I really appreciate your work in that area. And I would love to hear specifically about the work that you're doing right now, the work that you've started through the Environmental Health Research Institute. Can you tell us about that work and where it's going?
Okay, thank you. That's a nice question, Heidi. That's a good segue to explain my project. And I will, in this time, I will say Dr. Kastner was phenomenal and instrumental to develop that project to bring the nurse scientists to in a one umbrella to focus and think to identify the environmental challenge and projects to tackle the issue in the areas of their own expertise. And my project is to develop an environmental health checklist for South Asian immigrants in New York City. And my ambition is to replicate this checklist in other communities so that way everybody will have the expertise to the main challenge. I notice many communities are new homeowners or they are new renters. They don't have the technical or scientific expert, even though they may be able to read and write and communicate in the language, because many times this environmental health or hazard information are in scientific jargons and in websites or the material which is complex or people are afraid to open or read it. So the checklist will act as how to look for the environmental challenge or dangers if you are purchasing or if you are renting a place, and it will be targeting to the South Asian communities in the beginning. So that way I can understand the challenge, what they are currently facing, so that way we can make this make the checklist more user-friendly and to customized for their needs.
Anta, that's amazing. So you're taking an environmental, you're helping South Asian communities in New York City to understand what they need to look at as they're moving in to either buying or renting a house. How do they know whether or not the building is safe, what the environment toxins look like if it's on a Superfund site? Are those the kinds of things that you're looking at that you'll be including in your environmental health checklist for these South Asian communities?
Yes, exactly, Heidi. That's exactly what I am planning to do it. So identifying, and there are information and there are checklists and there are information available in different government and non-governmental websites. So try to make it more customized, because the South Asian communities immigrating from India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and expatriates from Caribbean and African countries. So means like the first generation are well qualified and they have their own lifestyle and they are expanded and they try to do a normal life. But the second generation of immigrant population, they have limitations in language and the experience. So they try to do the blue collar jobs. And they try to settle in a community where their community members are living. That makes like a South Asian conclave, like an Indian conclave or Little India or mini Pakistan or in different parts of New York City. So there is an advantage and disadvantage, advantage and disadvantage to this condition. Advantage is that you are settling in a community, so that way you have easy access to your own food items, your own religious or worship places, and your culture and cultural festivals. The disadvantage is that demand is more and the supply is less. That will create they need to satisfy with the existing resource or minimal resource. And that also contributes, create troubles, the number of dwelling units.
Thank you. I appreciate you sharing information about the population and their specific needs and some of the challenges that they face. I'm curious, can you talk to us a little bit about the environmental risks that are present in New York City? Because that's the setting, at least initially, for your project. Is that right?
Yes. So thank you, Heidi. That is a challenge I noticed. Many times, the lead painting is still a big issue. I know we are trying to remove as much we can, and the city and all the institutions are trying to rectify it. Still, there is a lead paint, and there is a asbestos remnants are there, and radon is a big challenge in the basements because we use the heat, and many of the buildings and apartments are 70 to 100 years old. That also create its own environmental challenge. And when you buy or when you rent all these facilities, this will give you not too many choices. So identifying the lead painting, identify the if you have any Superfund site, and if you are renting a place which is close to highway, you need to make sure you have environmental challenge that is bound to happen. So you need to make the precaution properly. And if you are living close to subway, there are challenges happening from the noise pollution and environmental pollution. All these things are there, but how much you can identify these things before you make a commitment to purchase a place, before you make a commitment to rent a place for a 1 year or 2 year, so that way they will be more empowered to make a conscious and prudent decision with all this knowledge.
Thanks, Santos. It sounds like the checklist is going to give information to communities about lead paint, asbestos, radon. I'm guessing also mold and floodplains, right? There are certain areas mm-hmm. in New York City mm-hmm. where basements are more prone for to flooding and mold contamination. You talked about Superfund sites and sort of noticing where those are in New York mm-hmm. City, paying attention to traffic patterns and exposure to air pollution. What an incredible resource that you are building for this community to understand what the potential environmental hazards are, so that they can, you said before they make a decision, to rent or buy a place or live in a certain area. Have you noticed any, have you been working with families and folks who are already in a rental situation or already own a home and have discovered that they have lead paint or asbestos or radon, mold? Are you also working with that group?
And yes. Thank you, Heidi. That is that's a good suggestion to work with. I'm in touch with an organization which is mostly dealing with the housing issues in New York City. So this is they have a different department. One department is mostly for tenant rights. So they usually do a monthly meetings in different building where we have a lot of South Asian community members living. And so that way my intention is I will try to identify the challenge before I make a checklist, so that way it will be more customized and more user-friendly and to meet their needs and identify. So I'm trying to meet them in the coming months in their monthly session, just to do type of environmental assessment. So that way they can look their living space in a more conscious eyes. So that way they will be able to see the challenge or problems that was not discovered earlier. This is also a good opportunity for me to empower the organizations to be the advocate for the community. And I will say there are a lot of construction happening in and around New York City and any neighborhood. And many times the community, especially the immigrant community, are not being informed, or they are not participating in the planning or implementation phase. And if there is any environmental challenge, so we can educate the community leaders about, look, these are like, whenever you have a construction happening or whenever there is a planning phase, you need to make sure your voice heard, so that way it will protect, not only protect your community members, it will protect the whole area. Also, everybody will be aware of the challenge in advance, so that way they can make the decision well advanced, not after something happens.
Thank you so much. I love your use of the word empowerment. And I mean, really, that resonates for me with your project. It's about empowering individuals and families before they make a decision about where they're going to live, or maybe giving them tools to assess their environment once they're already living in a particular dwelling, and then using that information to advocate and empower the entire community to make decisions that will really impact not just themselves, but that larger population as a whole. So I really appreciate your work in that area. Now, what did we forget to ask you about? Is there anything else about this project that we haven't asked you about that you want to share with us? I want to make sure we hear everything.
I mean, like, yes, I will say this is this have a personal connection to me too, because one of my close friend, he also in the same profession as a nurse, and he bought a new house, not new house, he bought a house 15 years ago, and means like he's well educated, he's a college graduate, he's working full time, and he has two small kids, and one of the time after a couple of when the kid was 3 year old, he went for a routine annual checkup for the kids, like a pediatric annual physical, and the doctor just normally checked the lead level. So lead level was very high. And that was the, nobody knows, the kid was totally no health issues at that moment. And that will trigger all this, governmental agencies inspection. And finally, they found the lead, the presence of lead, means there is no lead paint, there is nothing, but there was a heater. You know, the heating system in the northeastern area, they have a cover that was very old, and the kid was almost height. And they, when they tried to walk, the kid just hold it, and sometimes the kid touch or that ingest when they were trying to walk or when the parents were not paying attention. And so it was a revelation to me. Then I thought it is all this environmental challenge happening only to the people who are not aware of these things. Even if you know there are situations or there are things that may lie near to you, which can be causing hazardous chemical or can be the source of the hazardous chemical and things that. So then I thought it is something we need to be educate ourselves and to share that information to others, so that way many people will be able to save their own family from all these things, which can be easily identified and preventable.
Yeah, Anto, it sounds like everyone could use a checklist of how to check our environments in order to be able to prevent adverse health outcomes. So thank you for sharing the story of your friend, and hopefully the child was the lead poisoning was picked up early enough that they are now thriving, mm-hmm. and they have mitigated the lead in their home. I wanted to ask you about just the population, the South Asian population that you are working with. Can you talk a little bit about share a little bit about that population, the refugee population, and some of the reasons why they might be at a little higher risk of having an exposure to an environmental contaminant than potentially, another population?
Okay, thank you, Heidi. South Asian population, as I explained earlier, mostly people coming from India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Maldives, and expatriates from Caribbean and African countries. So the new South Asian population is one of the fastest growing population in the United States. So you will say around 10, like each census, there is an increase of to 10% or more from the previous population increase. And that also almost we are overtaking the Chinese and Korean population in the coming years. And that is one of the most fascinating. And what we see in South Asian community, you see a lot of professionals, a lot of businessmen, philanthropists, and people who are an expert in medical and technology field. So that way, there is a misconception about a model minority. But unfortunately, there are a lot of people who are struggling to make their like their day-to-day life. And that is also a challenge. Many times it is getting masked with the glorified pictures that you see in the magazines and the media. And South Asian communities, usually they try to settle in their own enclaves or their communities, because that is the culture they're trying to imitate from their own homelands. And so that way they have challenged to get the things in United States. So that is the reason you see most of the South Asian communities are in big cities, because that is the area where their family members came and settled successfully previously. So, and they have a lot of chronic disease challenge to start with. A lot of diabetes and heart disease are very prominent in this community, very prevalent in this community. Diabetes, as we say, our national average prevalence is around less than 10%. And South Asian community, the last statistics shows it's around 25%. Anybody, one in every four South Asian have diabetes. And unfortunately, diabetes affect them very young age. So in 40s and 45, 14, 50s, they get diabetes. So they have complications around 70, but in general population, it is much, much later. And their cultural and environmental, they are not too athletic, so they are not too fan of exercise, aerobics. So that also makes challenge. And they try to be involved in all their community and festivals. Most of the festivals and their celebrations are associated with good food, but it is not healthy food. So all these things also create a perfect recipe for cardiovascular disease and diabetes. And they are very community-oriented, as I mentioned. So they try to stick with their own families and their own community members. So they try to adjust in the locality, so that also create, so they don't venture out. So they try to satisfy with the minimum facilities, even though it is not perfect. That also create environmental challenge in the long run.
Thank you. You know, a few of your comments really resonated with me in thinking about our entire discussion. I'm interested to hear your perspective on environmental racism or environmental justice. Do you find that in your experience, the refugee populations that you've worked with are more likely to be living in these areas of disadvantage, areas of contamination? And do you think that that could be contributing, all these environmental exposures could be contributing to their high diabetes rates or other comorbidities?
It's like a yes. I will say that's a new thought coming up. Many times people thinking about the diabetes, asthma, all these things are just like a genetic or hereditary. But I'm seeing many times when the area is more polluted and the house value are going lower and the demand is getting lower and it is getting the property getting cheaper and the immigrants who thinks having a house is their ultimate immigrant, their dream and American dream, that they're getting naturally attracted to this type of enticement from the real estate developers or other media. And they try to attract all these things, and then they find they made a not healthy choice or not a wise choice because of the environmental challenge. And also, whenever there is a development or a construction happening, I see there is a unequal distribution of the change. When there is a construction happening, mostly it happening in an area where there is a less opposition or there is a more immigrant population, so that way they don't know the way to navigate the system. And they will, once they come to know about all these things, it will be too late. So that is the reason I'm trying to identify the leaders and see, and I'll help them to find out this challenge and see what is the way how we can fight to make like an activist from their own community to the system.
And so I just
want to
love and hold up the light to this really amazing exemplar of public health nursing that you have just presented. Thinking about whole populations as we're also thinking about individuals and looking at really the social and environmental determinants of health and how we move as nurses into that work and navigate helping communities get healthier or avoid, exposure and disease through that process of public health nursing. Can you talk to us a little bit about the world, the future, where you're going, what you want to see with this kind of work heading out into other communities or sort of what this ends up looking like in the future for you?
Okay, that's a nice thought. And Heidi, that's like everybody, my dream is to be involved in the community-based participatory research. So that way the research should not stay in academic skyscrapers. So you need to share, it should be distributed in the community, and the benefit should be given to the communities too. So that way, identifying the research need instead of coming from a unidirectional, identifying the research need from the communities and try to develop a task force or type of an initiative which have both parties, academic and community participants, and see how we can make the change. It is not going to happen in a overnight, but definitely that will be the way we can see the change happen each and every community. And that also not only it changed the society, it also makes leaders for the next generation, because once they see they can make a change in their local and their state level, people will be more inspired to do their civic job or do their civic responsibilities in a more profound way, instead of trying to be individualistic or like a approach. You will be more seeing the civic responsibilities is also part of your upbringing. That is a change the mindset of the people or the younger generation.
I just want to end with a couple of exclamation points on what you just said, Anto. Beautifully, beautifully illustrated the idea about, nurses moving into partnership with communities, moving out of the buildings and the academia and the skyscrapers and out into the world to really help infuse communities in activating around their own health and well-being through information and education and really partnership around what is important to these communities that we're in service to, and how can we continue along a path of health and well-being as nurses, as public health nurses in this work. I just wanted to ask if there's anything else that you would like to share with our Annie community today about what you're doing or what you think Annie nurses can be doing based on what you are experiencing and what you know.
I will say, I read one of the studies, you spend only 10% of your life in the hospitals or in the primary care offices. So whatever evidence-based project you will be doing it, you just only satisfy only 10% of the patients or their families. The 80 or 90% of your life happening in your own kitchen, bedroom, bathroom, all the and your surroundings. So you need to make the change. If you want to make a change, real change, the environment is the answer. So that is the any nurse, each and anybody who is trying to make the future in the nursing need to see the environment that one person or the one family or the one community lives is the most important solution to their own health issues. So if you improve the health of that area, 90% of the issue will be solved. And 10%, we have the technology and the infrastructure. So definitely if you make that a good balance of both, that will be the future. And the nursing, the structure and the areas of nursing will be having a strategic shift in the more outpatient and outdoor that will make that will be the solution to all this challenge that we are facing today.
Thanks again, Anto Paul and Heidi Segan and Heidi Honegger-Rogers, today bringing you wisdom through the Annie podcast. Thank you, Annie nurses, for being out there and the work you are doing in the world. And we look forward to the next podcast when we'll be sharing all sorts of new stories. Anto, thank you for your work. Thank you for being so committed to this vision and mission that you have. And we will see you soon.
Thank you. Thank you, both of you. And it's a pleasure to talk to you in this short amount of time.
Thank you to Anto Paul. I really enjoyed hearing about Anto's passions and accomplishments. His nursing background and commitment to public health help him to carry out his life's work. Thank you to Dr. Honegger-Rogers and Dr. Segan for a wonderful interview. And thank you all for listening. And as a reminder, the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast is 100% non-commercial. Please share it with colleagues, family, and friends. Thank you. Talk to you next time.